This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
And what we want to do is change the relationship to worry. When worry shows up, instead of treating it like an emergency, I want you to be bored with it. Go ahead right now. Practice rolling your eyes. Can you roll your eyes? Pretend that your friend is bothering you, or your dog just ate your hot dog, or your little brother just made a mess in the car again, right? Roll your eyes. Oh my gosh. That's how I want you to respond to worry.
Welcome to Season 6 of Flusterclux with Lynn Lyons, where we talk about a family's anxiety and all the big feelings, too. We tackle the serious stuff without being too serious, and I'm your co-host, Robin. I'm Lynn's sister-in-law, and I'm here to ask your questions.
And I'm Lynn Lyons. I'm an anxiety expert, speaker, mom, and author, and I've been a therapist for over 30 years. Parenting can be a flusterclux, and I'm here to help you find your way. I'll give you concrete steps to take and the words to say.
So Lynn, recently you did an episode where you got a lot off your chest of what you really wish teens knew about their mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking also, it's a great time for you to also talk to the parents and children who are on the younger side. And maybe it's a chance for you to talk directly to some little kids and parents can find this helpful. I think people always say to you, what do I say? Like, what's the language that I say? And I think parents who sort of get it still get a little tripped up there.
Yeah. So I am going to talk directly to kids. And parents, if you're listening to this introduction, right, you know, just forward to the part, we'll take a break, forward to the part where I'm going to introduce myself and talk to kids about how to manage worry. And then you'll have this as a resource. So if you get stuck, or if you're not sure what to say, or if you want your kids to listen to me saying it rather than you trying to say it, here's how I talk to kids about worry when they're in my office. Here's how I introduce the topic. Here's how I try and get them engaged, make it interesting. I'm just going to give you what I say.
Tell me the right age and audience for this.
I would say probably starting at age 5, certainly 6, and then maybe up to 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because so say 4 to 5 and then up to age 10 or 11 definitely leaves that blank spot open for the tween middle schooler who's developmentally a little trickier sometimes. They want to be thought of as like high schoolers, but they're not yet.
Right. So if you have a tween, you can have them listen to the high school one that I did a few weeks ago, because that'll absolutely apply to them. It is a little tricky because when I'm using language, talking about worry, talking about externalizing it, talking about how we relate to it, the biggest pushback I get is from those tweeners, those middle schoolers, because they don't want to be talked down to. They don't want to be treated like little kids. They're very clear that they want to be addressed more as adults. But in terms of their ability to manage things, in terms of their development, they really do benefit from some of the language that I use for earlier kids. One of the things you can say, parents, or one of the things you can do is like, say you're having them listen to this, listen to the other one, and you decide which fits best for your kid. You can say, so Lynn is talking to kids that range from age 5 all the way up to your age, whatever that is. So just recognize that she's got a lot of ground to cover, and she may be talking in a way that is applicable to younger kids, but the information is the same. So you do a little preempting to say like, yeah, Lynn's talking to a lot of ages. This is what I do with the video too that I have that Lynn Lyons talks to kids. I say, look, listen to this and recognize I'm covering a lot of ages. Yeah.
So the other thing I wanted to sort of go over with you before this is that the work that you offer parents in your books, a lot of times people might come to this because they have a child who's really stuck in a worry pattern on a specific type of content. Like, my kid's really freaked out about throwing up, and we have to design our whole lives around the fear of throwing up or the discomfort with being late or all of these different types of things. the prevention is the same as the treatment. So give us a little bit about that.
Correct. So I always say that the things that I do in my office when I'm working with kids that are really struggling with anxiety are the very same things, the very same skills that I'm going to teach for prevention. And the same goes for depression, by the way. The skills that we put in place ahead of time are preventative. I personally, professionally, don't think that we talk about prevention as much as we should. Because when we can get ahead of this thing, when we can start using this language early on, when we can start developing these skills, then we're familiar with them. It's like anything, right? If you are dealing with your basement as it's flooding, it's a little bit trickier than if you prepare your basement so it doesn't flood. So we want to try and get ahead of this thing. So this language, we don't have to talk about it in terms of diagnosis or pathology or I have an anxiety disorder. We can just talk about it as worry that is a normal part of being a human being and it's going to show up for everybody. And what do we do when worry shows up? I mean, that's really what I'm trying to teach kids. What do we do when worry shows up? That's the message I want kids to get.
This is the thing that I also think you would like parents to understand, but you can correct me. The average listener might say, like, well, I've got one kid who has more of an anxiety issue than the other. So I'm thinking about this for child A for anxious, and isn't really thinking about it for child B. But instead, you wish that parents understood that anxiety impacts everybody at different moments, and that both children are deserving of the prevention and the treatment skills that are the same thing.
Correct. I do not need to correct a single word that you just said. You are exactly correct.
It's like a philosophical shift, because so many people come to you because they're already like in a bit of a pickle.
Right.
But everybody should be listening to this to avoid the pickles.
Right. Michael Yapko, who I talk about all the time, he talks about mood management. He says, if you have moods, then you should learn how to manage them. And guess what? Everybody has moods. If you have a kid with ADHD, we can really focus on executive functioning or figuring out how to pay attention to time. Well, you know what? Every kid has to learn how to organize. Every kid has to learn how to plan so that we show up to something on time. So these are really wonderful skills. Every kid benefits from being coached, from having good modeling about social skills and how to connect with people. And we did that episode a few weeks ago on likability. When we begin to just broaden our perspective on this, that it's not about, okay, my kid has this problem that I need to fix, and we start thinking about it as much more a universal path of moving through being a kid, being a teen, being a human being, we start equipping kids and we start being preventative. People say, we should treat mental health more like physical health. And I'm like, really? Right. Have you looked around? We don't do preventative stuff for physical health very well. People are much more reactive. Our medical system is much more reactive. And I want the thinking to change when it comes to things like emotions and moods and worries and executive functioning. I want us to get ahead of it so we're not just dealing with it when the basement is filling up with water.
I also want to speak to the anxious parents who are listening right now and resisting the idea of letting their kids hear this because they say, well, they're not showing any signs of anxiety yet, and I don't want to fill their head with ideas.
Correct. There are people who have written to me and said, my child is very anxious and I can't let her read Playing with Anxiety, the Casey book, because Casey talks about vomit and I don't want to give her any ideas, or she gets worried about vomit, so that's totally triggering for her. This is the wrong way to think about it. The more we have these conversations, the more we allow kids to step into these conversations and learn this language, the better off they're going to be. We know that anxious parents, and I know you're out there listening because there's a lot of you, and it's okay. Anxious parents can be very protective about what they expose their children to for fear of creating a problem. This is backwards. The more that you keep them from practicing, the more that you protect them from experiencing discomfort or uncertainty, the more likely it is that they're going to develop a problem. And we know people don't like this statistic, but it's true, everybody. If you're an anxious parent and you do nothing about it with your kids, you are 6 to 7 times more likely to create an anxious child. So we're trying to interrupt those patterns. It means we got to go against what your worry is telling you. It means we have to push back against that feeling, that intuitive feeling of, I don't want my kid to get upset, and do things in a different way. And I know it feels challenging. I know it feels difficult, but you got to trust me on this, people. This is what we know works.
So we'll take a break. And when we come back, Lynn's voice might change a little because she's intentionally talking to your kids.
That's true.
You know, when you're listening to a song on the radio and you just have this feeling that the song was written about you or that it was someone that you love trying to say something to you? Well, now imagine the power to gift that same incredible feeling to someone you love with an original song that actually is about them and about your relationship, and that Songfinch writes just for you. Songfinch lets you create an original radio quality song inspired by your own life and the people that you love. It's completely unique, it's personal, and it lasts forever. I had the pleasure of creating a family song with Songfinch about our summer celebrations that we have every year. I knew it was going to make everybody cry, and it certainly did. I got to be honest, I was even crying giving all of the information and helping personalize my song with the writer that I chose. He absolutely delivered a beautiful acoustic song that captured exactly what I was looking for, and it was so fun to share with the family. So whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, a wedding or an anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. Don't waste another dollar on more stuff. It only takes 4 to 7 days, but that song will last forever. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free so you and the lucky person or people can listen to it anywhere, anytime. So go to songfinch.com/fluster and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, the URL is songfinch.com/fluster. Don't forget to share your song with us too in our Facebook group, songfinch.com/fluster. Lumen is the world's first handheld metabolic coach. It's a device that measures your metabolism through your breath, and on the app, it lets you know if you are burning fat or carbs, and it gives you a tailored guidance to improve your nutrition, workouts, sleep, and even stress management. So how Lumen works is that you breathe into the Lumen device first thing in the morning, and you'll know what's going on with your metabolism, whether you're burning mostly fat or carbs. And then Lumen gives you a personalized nutrition plan for that day based on your measurements. You can also breathe into it before and after workouts and meals, so you know exactly what's going on in your body in real time, and Lumen will give you tips to keep you on top of your health game. I love the extra data that I'm getting about my health right now, because for many women of my age, as we are going through a long chapter of hormone changes, Lumen's helping me use my body's data to make the best choices. So your metabolism is your body's engine. It's how your body turns the food you eat into the fuel that keeps you going. And because your metabolism is at the center of everything your body does, optimal metabolic health translates to a bunch of benefits, including easier weight management, improved energy levels, and better sleep, which is key. So Lumen gives you recommendations to improve your metabolic health. So what is metabolic flexibility and why should you care? Well, the key to metabolic health is something called metabolic flexibility. We love flexibility at Flusterclux, and that's where Lumen really shines. It refers to your body's ability to efficiently switch between using different fuel sources like carbs and fats, and there are preferred times to use each, and how well you can switch places you on the metabolic flexibility spectrum. So after getting to know you through your breath, Lumen gives you a metabolic flex score that you can track and improve upon. So if you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me and use Fluster to get $100 off Lumen. That's LUMENDOTME. And use Fluster at checkout for $100 off. Thank you, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode.
If you are a mom who's trying to keep your calendar organized, keep your family's appointments where they need to be, then I'll tell you, the Skylight Calendar is a product that you ought to check out. You know how it is. Running a household can be pure chaos and it can be so stressful. This is why you need to check out the Skylight Calendar. It is going to make your life easier, mom. It really is. The Skylight Calendar is a smart touchscreen calendar and organizer for all your chores, groceries, to-do lists, and a great way to manage appointments to make sure they never overlap and they're never missed. It helps keep busy households on track so families can get time back for moments that really matter. The Skylight Calendar is so easy to use and to set up. It's not going to frustrate you. You're going to be able to get it going within minutes. It syncs events from other family calendars, including Google, Apple, Outlook. You can add events directly using the touchscreen or with the free Skylight mobile app. Updates to linked calendars will automatically appear on the Skylight Calendar at home. So no more worrying that you guys are going to forget something. No more cluttered paper calendars. It shows all family events together in one spot. The events are color-coded, so you can easily see what everyone has going on each week. When the calendar's not in use, you can turn it into a digital picture frame. It's 100% satisfaction guaranteed. If you don't love the Skylight Calendar, you'll receive a full refund. They offer a 120-day money-back guarantee and free returns. You can't beat it.
I think the feature that I love most is the collaborative way we can all add to the grocery list. And then when I'm ready to place an online order, whether I'm at home or my office, I have that list and there's no more items that we forget.
So, as a special time-limited offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/flusterclucks. That's skylightcal.com/flusterclucks. Mother's Day is coming right up, so order today to get 15% off your purchase at skylightcal.com/flusterclucks. Okay, we're back. Hey, everybody. My name is Lynn. Lynn Lyons is my full name, and I help parents with kids that worry. And one of the things that I'm very, very committed to is teaching kids about how worry works. And I will tell you that a lot of kids don't know how worry works, but it's really, really helpful. Let me tell you a little bit about your brain. And if you're sitting here listening, you've got a brain. You do. And all these parts that I'm about to talk about, you've got them. I guarantee it. Worry is something that happens to everybody. Because when worry shows up, worry says, I have to know everything. I want to know exactly what's going to happen. I want to feel comfortable. So whenever we step into something new, of course, some worry is going to show up. Because if it's a new thing, if it's something you've never done before, if it's something that is maybe a little scary for you because you've never done it before, a part of you, a part of your brain is right there to say, oh, I don't know about this. This could be scary. Say you're going to swimming lessons for the first time. Say you have to go to the dentist. Maybe you've got a cavity and you never had a cavity before. Maybe you're just starting a new grade in school or even changing schools. Worry is right there to say what worry loves to say. I have to know everything. I have to know every detail. I have to feel completely comfortable with this. Or worry says, I'm out. I'm out. And one of the things that happens sometimes is if you get upset, which is okay if you get upset, if you get upset because your worry shows up and tells you you can't handle something, sometimes families begin to avoid the things that make you worry. A long time ago, I met a little girl. She was probably about 8. She was really afraid of dogs, and she was really afraid of bumblebees. Those were the two things that she worried about the most. Her family worked very, very hard to make sure that she never saw any dogs and she never saw any bumblebees, which meant that in the summertime, it was really hard to go to a park. It was really hard to walk out her front door because they had these beautiful bushes that had beautiful flowers. And of course, the bees love the flowers because that's what bees do. to make honey. What we had to do is we had to help her manage her worry, not help her avoid dogs, not help her avoid bumblebees, but help her manage her worry. Everybody has a worry part. It lives in a part of your brain called your prefrontal cortex. If you're listening to this, if you were to put your hand over your forehead, you would be putting your hand near your prefrontal cortex. This is where you think. This is where you learn. If I ask you what 2 + 2 is, do you know what it is? 4. You just used your prefrontal cortex. If I ask you, if you're a little older and I ask you what 7 × 7 is, do you know? Did you say 49? You just used your prefrontal cortex. If I ask you what day it is right now, what day of the week, and you tell me, do you know? Good. If I ask you what day it will be the day after tomorrow, you just used your prefrontal cortex. This is where you think. This is where you imagine. This is where you come up with amazing ideas. If you're building Legos or if you're creating a project with your fifth grade class, it's a wonderful part of your brain. But because it can imagine, worry likes to grab onto that imagination and tell you big, scary stories. Worry generally says something like, you can't handle it. That's a dog. Oh my gosh, what's going to happen? That's a bumblebee. What if I get stung? There's going to be a thunderstorm. That's dangerous. What if somebody looks at me wrong? What if I'm starting my new school and I can't find the classroom? What if my tummy hurts? What if I can't find the bathroom? Worry loves to make you think about things and situations that make you feel uncomfortable. So what are we going to do about that? Remember, worry wants you to know everything. Worry might say, I'm not going to go to that new school unless I can know exactly what's going to happen every minute of every day. Ugh, that's really impossible. What I want you to say to your worry is, you know what, worry? I get it that you want to know everything. I get it that you want to be comfortable all the time. But because I'm growing, because I'm learning, because I want to have new experiences, because I want to have friends, because I want to play soccer, because I want to go to third grade, I am going to step into situations even if I don't know exactly what's going to happen. Most of the time, we know some of the things. You know where you're going to go to school. Maybe you know the name of your teacher. But it's impossible to know exactly what's going to happen all the time. So what are we going to do? We're going to pull that worry out, right? We're just going to pull it right out and we're going to give it a name. My name for my worry is Edith Ethel. I know it's kind of silly. I don't even know how I came up with it. Edith Ethel. You may name your worry Joe. You may name it Sally. Maybe you name it peanut butter. I don't care. Whatever you want to name your worry, you go ahead. You can even draw a picture of it, or you can talk to your mom or dad about what you think your worry looks like. And what we want to do is when worry shows up, remember, no matter what you worry about, because different kids worry about different things and everybody has worries, no matter what you worry about, worry's going to say, you can't handle it. This is too much. We have to know everything. And what I want you to start practicing doing is saying, oh, hello, worry. Let's say you named your worry Sally. Oh, hello, Sally. I knew you were going to show up. Why did we know Sally was going to show up? Because you're stepping into something new. Because you can't know exactly what's going to happen, and because your worry likes to take things and make them into an emergency, even if it's not. And when your worry turns something into an emergency, it gets your body going, because your body acts as if it's an emergency, which is a great thing for your body to be able to do, but not when you're stepping into things like a new school or swimming lessons. All of those things are normal parts of life, and worry tends to blow them up. Worry tends to take your imagination and run with it. What do? We give our worry a name. When worry shows up, we say, oh, hi, worry. Nice to see you. We don't have to argue with worry. We don't have to say to worry, oh, worry, bees are fine. We don't have to say to worry, oh, my dentist is really nice, or it's going to be okay, or maybe I don't have a cavity. We don't have to say any of that. You can if you want, but you don't have to. What I do want you to say is, hi, worry, you're kind of boring. This is what you do. This is how you get me going. And then I want you to keep moving forward and practice doing the thing that worry tells you you can't do. Now, here's the reality of it. As you're doing this new thing, you might feel uncomfortable. Maybe your tummy will hurt a little bit. Maybe your hands will feel a little shaky. Maybe you won't feel so great about trying this new thing. That's okay, because the problem with worry is it doesn't care whether or not you do new things. It doesn't care if you learn to swim. It doesn't care if you go upstairs to your bedroom by yourself. It doesn't care if you have fun with your friends at a birthday party. It doesn't care. And the more you do things, even when worry says, you can't handle it, the more your brain learns that you can handle it. Now, there's a mistake sometimes that grownups make. Let me tell you what it is. Grownups think that if they can just give you all the information, if they can reassure you, if they can tell you 1,000 times that everything is fine, then worry will be quiet. It's not true. You have to talk to worry. You can't get rid of it. A lot of times kids will say, I'm going to take my worry and I'm going to bury it in the backyard. Or I'm going to take my worry and I'm going to send it to the moon. And then worry comes back and they'll say to me, well, I talked to my worry and it came back, so I guess this doesn't work. Worry is going to come back. It's a part of you. It's a normal part of you. When worry comes back, we say, oh, you're back again. Nice to see you. I'm not surprised that worry has shown up. Why? Because you're doing something new. You're learning something new. You're stepping into a situation that maybe feels a little tricky. So, mom, dad, grandma, Aunt Sally, as you're listening, I want you to hear loud and clear that it's okay if worry shows up. And what we want to do is change the relationship to worry. When worry shows up, instead of treating it like an emergency, I want you to be bored with it. Go ahead right now. Practice rolling your eyes. Can you roll your eyes? Ugh. Pretend that your friend is bothering you, or your dog just ate your hot dog, or your little brother just made a mess in the car again. Roll your eyes. Oh my gosh. That's how I want you to respond to worry. And you can practice this. Say, for example, you are going to start swimming lessons, or you're starting a new grade in school. It's really helpful with your parents, with whoever loves you, for you guys to practice this. So we pull worry out. Here's what it sounds like. We pull worry out. Let's just say we named your worry Frank, right? Pull worry out. Hi, Frank. Nice to see you. Frank, I'm going to go to school, or I'm going to go to swimming lessons, or I'm going to go to the dentist, and I know you're going to show up, Frank. And I know you're going to say, you can't handle it. Frank, here's the thing. You're not in charge of me. You're not in charge of my family. And I can handle not knowing everything. And in fact, I'm learning to do something pretty interesting. It's called rolling around in the mites and maybes of life. So the more you practice managing worry, managing Frank, managing Sally, managing Edith Ethel, the more you practice handling it, the more your body learns, the more your brain learns that you're capable, that you can do things even when worry tells you you can't. Worry is going to show up. We all have worry. How are you going to handle it? How are you going to practice handling it? And how are you going to let worry know that it is not in charge of you? It is not in charge of you. It's a very important piece of information to have. If your body reacts to worry, if you feel like you have a tummy ache, if you feel a little shaky, maybe your heart is pounding a little bit, that's normal too. So sometimes before we step into something new, maybe we take a few breaths to let our body know that we're good. Maybe we run around, we use up some energy. So maybe before you go to the dentist, this is going to sound weird, everybody. Before you go to the dentist, do 20 jumping jacks in the parking lot. How about that? Before you walk out the door, if you're afraid of bumblebees, run around your house 5 times, then walk out the door. It is okay for you to use this energy and feel this energy. Mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, whoever is listening, I want you to recognize this is not about the content. I don't care if the worry is about dogs or bumblebees or the dentist or school. The goal is for everyone in the family to respond, this is not an emergency. This is boring. This is repetitive. This is persistent. And practice, practice, practice. We are, grown-ups, literally laying down new pathways in the brain. So you are going to model. You are going to pull your own worry out and give it a name. Let your kids call you out on the worry when it happens. And the more you do it together, the more you make it playful, the more you practice, the easier this gets. Every kid has worry. Every kid has worry. Every grown-up has worry. The goal is to learn how to step into life, even if some worry comes along. All right, good luck. Have fun practicing. You can even go on the Facebook group and you can let me know how it goes. I love to see pictures of worry. I love to hear the stories about how kids handled their worry. I love, love, love to hear what kids do when worry shows up. It's not about getting rid of it. It's about learning how to manage it. Okay, so we're going to take a break right now. Thanks for listening, everybody. And when we come back, Robin and I are going to just talk a little bit to the grownups about what to do, the do's and don'ts, and to give you some additional tips. Robin and I travel a lot, and part of traveling is that you learn that you have to compromise, right? So maybe you're not going to get the best seat on the plane. Well, you know where you shouldn't compromise? You shouldn't compromise with your health care. When it comes to your health, there's no compromising, everybody. Don't go back to that one doctor who didn't really pay attention to you, who rushed you through your appointments. Check out ZocDoc. This is the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, insurance. So literally no compromises here. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You don't have to wait. You don't have to be on hold with a receptionist. These doctors all have verified reviews from real patients. So the typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is just between 24 and 72 hours. That's it. You can even score same-day appointments. I have two young adult sons. They are always needing something, right? We've had broken elbows. We've had tonsils. We've had this. We've had that. If I were a young person, if I were a parent trying to help my young person find a doctor, this is what I would use. So go to ZocDoc.com/fluster and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/fluster. ZocDoc.com/fluster. Picture the thing that you've always wanted to learn, and now picture that you're learning it from the person who's literally the best in the world at it. It's fantastic, and that's what you get with Masterclass. I recently listened to Matthew Walker's talk on sleep and the importance of consistency with sleep. I loved Bobby Brown's Masterclass, gave me all these tips about putting on makeup because, you know, I'm in front of a camera sometimes and I want to look good, and Bobby was such a big help. So this year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Like, I actually put on makeup the way that Bobby Brown taught me how to put on makeup. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Masterclass offers over 180 instructors. So whether you want to master negotiation with Chris Voss, think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or maybe you want to learn how to just make your makeup look better with Bobby Brown or sleep better with Matthew Walker, with Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. I loved it. There are over 200 classes to pick from. New classes are added every single month, like a class that talks about your gut health. So many interesting things to learn. So every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's absolutely no risk. Right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/fluster. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/fluster. masterclass.com/fluster. Okay, so now back to the show.
Lynn, I think that you referenced this with the eye rolling. I think that this can't be repeated enough, that you talked about being annoyed and bored by worry when it shows up. This doesn't work for the kids, but for the grownups who are of a certain age. It's absolutely that Seinfeld reaction. Hello, Newman.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what I'm always trying to convey is that worry's job is to promote something to an emergency, right? I say that if it had a t-shirt, this is an emergency. And that's why we get those physical symptoms, because the body responds as if it's an emergency. So we're changing our response to it. We're teaching our kids to change their response to it, because the more that kids learn they can handle the discomfort, it's okay if your heart goes up a little bit. It's okay if you're nervous when you're going to the dentist. The more we take it out of emergency and put it in the category of this is okay because it's what brains and bodies do, the more kids will step in, the more we normalize it. That's one of my big beefs right now, is that we've pathologized a lot of normal human reactions. And so kids get anxious about being anxious. Parents get worried that their kids are going to be worried. We just got to marinate our kids in this. Practice, practice, practice.
The other thing that you talk about is the serious factor, how anxiety wants an emergency. And that goes to adults too. So think about the last time there was something about your child that you were really worried about, that you shared with someone. And when they didn't respond with the same emergency concern or tone and told you, like, don't worry about it, you got annoyed, because anxiety wants things really serious and really emergency-like.
Right.
So that's how grownups also fall into that pattern.
Right.
It's just helpful when we see it in our kids, we're also seeing it in ourselves.
Yeah. And one of the things that I think I've talked about a lot, but just bears repeating as you're listening to this with your kids, is that it's very easy to get caught up in that pattern of content-based reassurance. So your child is afraid of bumblebees, so you go way into the fact that bumblebees, you know, are afraid of you, and if they sting you, it doesn't hurt, blah, 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 blah. You can do that once, right? So the way I say is give them a little reassurance, just so they know how the world works, and say, like, look, we're going to walk out the front door. We know there are bumblebees. They really don't want to sting you. Worry is going to convince you that this is an emergency. We are going to not let worry be in charge. So you throw in a little bit of that reassurance, and then you move forward. What happens oftentimes with kids that are worried is that the parents feel like their job is to repeat over and over and over and over again, everything's going to be fine. The bees aren't going to sting you. There's no such thing as vampires, thunderstorms, or, you know, whatever you say. So you can drop it in once, and then you really want to focus on what worry does, not focus on providing continual reassurance about the content of what the worry is. Because that's where we get caught up in this idea that in order for a child to move forward, they have to just keep getting more and more and more and more information. I see this all the time. I see it in schools. You've got a child who worries about something, and all the adults are there to continually tell the child, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And the worry is there to say, see, this must be bad, because look, these adults are talking about it all the time. The bottom line is, this is about changing the relationship to worry when it shows up, period.
Common phrases that parents use that you've talked about a lot, on one extreme would be, I will never let anything happen to you. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm. Right.
On the other extreme, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
Neither right. of these are helping children recognize that they're having trouble with what is uncertain or uncomfortable.
Right. Because we're trying to say, like, oh, either this is terrible, I can't let you experience this, or it's not so bad. Why do we care? The sweet spot in the middle is really, really big. It's a really big sweet spot. And you got this, parents. You just want to be like, oh, here comes worry again. One important thing too. Say you're doing this with your child, or say you try and do this with your child, and your child is like, I am not doing this. This is stupid. I'm not going to give my worry a name. You know, that's dumb. Or a child that says, this worry is really a part of me, and you're telling me that it's not a part of me. Here's how we get around that. you can say to kids, particularly as they get closer to tween years, you can say, look, we are talking about this in a way that allows you to learn about different parts of yourself. So I know this is a part of you. Your worry is a part of you. But if we can step back, kind of make it a game and be able to observe this worry, this is a really helpful way. And Lynn does it with adults too, which is true. I do. If you've got a little kid, so say you come up with this and you name the worry Jeremy or whatever, they're going to think it's fun for a few days. Then they're going to be worried about something. And they are looking for you to either remove them from the situation, let them get out of the situation, or offer that content-based reassurance. When you change your pattern, parent, there's going to be pushback. It's called an extinction burst. There's going to be pushback. So it may go great for a few days, but then your child says, I'm not doing that anymore. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. I hated listening to that lady that you made me listen to. This is dumb. So know that it's very likely that that's going to happen. And that's okay. Take a little break and say, I can see that you're getting worried right now. So I'm going to stick with this. Then you can do a role play. And what you can say to your child when they're pissed off at you can say, okay, I get it. You don't want to talk to Jeremy right now. I'm going to talk to Jeremy. So you pull Jeremy out and you say, listen, Jeremy, you've been bossing around my kid and you've been telling Matthew that he can't fill in the blank. He can't go up the stairs by himself or he can't go to school. I am tired of you, Jeremy, showing up and making everybody think this is an emergency. And you can even say to Jeremy, remember, your kid's listening to all this. Yeah, don't go and talk to Jeremy in a separate room. Do it in front of your kid. That's the point. Yeah. And you can say, look, I used to get sucked into what you were doing too. And in fact, I have a worry part myself. My worry part is named Irene. And when worry shows up, it is easy for kids and easy for parents to get sucked in. And I'm not doing it. Because my kid is really, really great at figuring things out, and I'm going to support him, and I'm going to help him, and I'm not putting you in charge. So you can have a word with the worry part. Give the worry part a talking to, and that's why it's helpful to pull this thing out, because it allows you to talk to the worry in a way where you're not admonishing your child, you're not lecturing your child, you're just giving the worry a piece of your mind. Very, very effective, and kids like it. One of the things that I talk about a lot is I use those three X's. So we're going to expect worry to show up, we're going to externalize it, and we're going to experiment. So we're going to experiment doing the things that worry doesn't want you to do. Now, here's one question that I get a lot. What if the thing your child is afraid of isn't something that you can experiment with? What if your child is worrying about death? What if your child is worrying about a car accident? What if your child is worried about, you know, getting cancer? We can't practice that. This is where the content doesn't matter. So when the worry shows up, if your child is asking a lot of questions or if your child is getting stuck in thinking about this and worrying about this, all you have to say is, okay, so it sounds like worry is showing up and really helping you get stuck in imagining these things. That's okay. Let's just have a little conversation with worry. We say, hi, Jeremy. I know you want me to think these scary things. That's what you do. I'm actually going to go and live my life. So then go read a book, go play Legos, go start making dinner. You don't have to get into the content of it. And when we're talking about the experimenting in a situation in which we can't really practice the thing, right? If your kid is afraid of kidnapping, we're not going to stage a kidnapping and then be like, see, we got you out of the trunk. It all worked out. We're not going to do that. The experimenting is you practice talking to worry and then moving forward. So it's a little bit different. If we've got a concrete thing, we can practice getting near dogs. We can practice going to swimming lessons. But if it's a big thing like that, we can practice acknowledging the worry, saying, hello, nice to see you. That's normal. And then moving forward into whatever activity or whatever life is presenting at that moment. That's the experimentation.
I would suggest that listeners who are really trying to grasp this, go back and listen to a couple of specific things. One, the playlist that we have on Spotify with the series of the 7 anxiety disruptors, which is taken directly from your book, Anxious Kids, Anxious Parents. And then we also have another episode specifically about not falling into the traps of what you're calling content-based reassurance. Because parents spend a lot of time wasting it, to be honest. Not getting the fact that it's not about the content, it's about the patterns. So the sooner you can differentiate between the two and your language, the easier this is.
Right. The relationship we want to change is the relationship to worry, not the relationship to dogs, not the relationship to bees, not the relationship to the swimming teacher. So when you look at that big picture, and I get it, this is a hard concept for people because our instinct is to go in and change whatever it is that your child is worried about. I've got bigger fish to fry here. I'm going after the pattern because the content doesn't really matter to me. And the pattern is really where we can make some great progress because the content just jumps around too.
Right. If you don't work on the pattern, the content will change and your child will be worried about a new thing coming down the line.
I have a great example of this. I did a talk the other night and there were a lot of educators there. And a woman emailed me yesterday. She's a teacher. And she said, when you talk about how the content just jumps around and how changing the content really makes the problem worse, she said in her school, kids were getting really anxious when teachers were using the color red to do corrections on their papers. So the school decided that now they were going to use the color purple instead of the color red to make the corrections. Well, guess what happened? They started getting anxious about the color purple because they all figured out that purple was now the corrected color. So now they've changed it again and they can only use the color green to make corrections on kids' papers. This is bonkers, people. This is nuts. This is not going to work. They're going to go through the whole color wheel because kids are worried about getting their papers corrected, and all they're doing is connecting the color. So that's a very good example of thinking that changing the content gets rid of the problem. Changing the color gets rid of the worry. What's the skill we want to teach? The ability to tolerate
being corrected.
Being corrected. Yeah, that's how you learn. Very, very good example of how we get caught up in the content. We want to talk about how do we manage discomfort and manage uncertainty, not how do we rearrange the world to make sure that everything goes as planned. Thanks for listening. And if you found this podcast helpful, please give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find this information.
And if you'd like to dig deeper on any of these topics, we have specialized playlists on our Spotify profile, and the link is in the show notes. Topics like teens, depression, and OCD. Bye, Lynn.
Bye, Robin.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.